Listeners, welcome to another episode of the Story Explorer. In this episode, I will take you behind the scenes of my preparation for a book club evening. I'll share what questions arise for me and why. Normally, I focus on highlighting aspects of a book without giving away too much, as I'm never sure whether you've read it yet. Personally, I avoid reading reviews before diving into a book, as I find they often spoil the experience by revealing key plot points and sharing the reviewer's entire perspective. With the Story Explorer podcast, I always aim to keep things spoiler-free. However, this episode might be a little different. The plot of the book I'm discussing is quite defined, and in order to have a meaningful conversation about it, I need to share some of what happens. So, if you haven't read it yet, please be aware that there may be spoilers ahead. That said, I'd like to offer a way for you to engage with this episode without ruining your reading experience. Write down the questions I share, and when you read the book, try to find the answers yourself. This way, even though I'll be revealing a lot, I hope it enhances your reading experience rather than diminishing it. So here we go. I'm preparing for my book club evening at Saint Germain. The book club will come together to talk about the book Heaven, written by Miko Kawakami in 2009. She is a Japanese author, and with this book she won the Murasaki Shikibu Prize in Japan. The English translation by Sam Batt and David Boyd was shortlisted for the International Booker Prize in 2022. This book was recommended to me by a bookseller from Exclusive Books in Hyde Park, Johannesburg. She had read it and she told me, "It is hectic, but brilliant." That intrigued me. The book's main theme is bullying. I believe this is something in our world that needs our attention. I decided this was going to be the book I wanted to talk about with other people at book club. In Heaven, we meet two teenagers who are being bullied at school. The main character is called Eyes. It's how his classmates call him. Eyes believes they call him like this because he has a lazy eye. He becomes close with a girl called Kojima, who is also a victim of bullying. The bullying is violent and disturbing. At some point, Eyes is locked up alone in a room, and later in the story, his body is being used as a human soccer ball. The two victims start to write notes to each other. They develop a bond that seems like friendship. Both teenagers do not have home situations where they can find the help they need. Left on their own, they develop life strategies to cope with their situation. Yet, after a particularly violent, public, and shameful assault on Eyes and Kojima, something changes. Eyes' friend Kojima disappears from the story, and her role is replaced by his stepmom. At the end of the story, Eyes finds the courage to undergo an eye operation. I'm planning to bring about 5 questions. There's no motto in this book, so I'll have to find another way in. But my entry point is not very difficult, as I'm certain I want to open this conversation with the question, what is the trauma here? I'll share with you why I knew this question should be the start of our book discussion. At one point, while I was reading this story, I came across a reel on Instagram featuring Mel Robbins and Dr. Gabor Maté. I follow Mel Robbins because I find her to be such an energetic and thoughtful woman. As an influencer, she shares her thoughts and advice on topics that resonate with many of us, especially women. She has a podcast where she explores issues that concern many of us. As for Dr. Gabor Maté, he is a retired physician who is known for his expertise on addiction, trauma, childhood development, and the relationship between stress and illness. I also follow him on Instagram, and I've read his book Scattered Minds, which gives us original and thought-provoking insights into ADHD. In this particular reel, Mel Robbins shares a deeply personal story from her teenage years. During a family trip, someone came into her room at night while she was sleeping and lay on top of her. Of course, she was frightened, but instead of going to her parents and ask for help, she did not. She didn't tell them what happened, she kept quiet. Dr. Matthay then asked her a set of specific questions that lead her to a new perspective about what the trauma was. He explains to her that what happened was harmful, yet the actual trauma with this incident actually is the fact that she couldn't tell her parents. In that moment, she wasn't in a safe environment where she could go to them for help. As I watched this reel, a sudden realization hit me. In heaven, the two main characters who are being bullied both do not have parents who are actively present in the lives of the teenagers. I apply Dr. Gabor Mate's insights to the events in heaven, and I connected it to the deeper meaning of the story. To me, it became unescapably clear that Miko Kawakami urges us to think about the essential role that caregivers, parents, and close family members play in the mental safety of teenagers. In this story, for me, the real trauma is the absence of close family who act as a support and safety net for the victims of the bullying. I wonder what others might think about this idea. I shape it into the first question for the group. What is the actual trauma here? Moving on to the second question I need to formulate, I think of something I noticed while reading this story. The main characters disclose their views and opinions, perhaps I could even say survival strategies, via quite long dialogues. They caught my eye, but I couldn't quite pinpoint why they stood out to me. To get more transparency, I go through all dialogues and separate the ideas and viewpoints per character. This results in three monologues. This helps me to clearly see three different life philosophies. One of them immediately reminds me of the French philosopher Sartre. The other two are harder to place. But identifying exactly which philosophy belongs to a character isn't important for me here. What I want is to experience with the group the impact of three different ways of coping with life. That's when the idea for my second question appears. It is a performance. Each monologue should be performed by a speaker from the group, and the listeners should write down what they liked or didn't like from what they heard. It should be interesting to experience the effect of each speech. And I'm curious to see how these speeches will land with the group and what responses they will evoke. The monologue from one of the bullies, the character Momose, is the longest by far. He displays a total lack of care for what's happening around him. I consider shortening his speech, but in the story, he is given the most space as well. I believe the writer did this intentionally, so I leave his long speech as it is. The victim Kojima seems to me to make meaning out of everything that happens to her. She surrounds herself with signs, ways to remember her dad whom she lost after her parents' divorce. And finally, I assemble the monologue of the main character known as Eyes. His monologue is short in comparison to the others, and he only seems to ask questions. I print the three monologues, and my second question is ready. I'm excited and anxious about the idea of this question. I would read one of the monologues. I could do that. But I wonder as well, will I find two other people who dare to perform too? I feel I have two profound questions to start off the discussion. Yet while reading, I noted a few more interesting ideas that deserve our attention. One of them is the vocabulary Kojima uses to describe her feelings. I'll share a passage with you from page 32 and 33. Eyes and Kojima are on their way to an outing. Kojima wants to show Eyes a specific artwork and they take the train together. Eyes tells us, sitting next to her, way closer to her face than usual, I had no idea where to look and got a little flustered. Kojima didn't seem concerned about it. She looked me right between the eyes, the way she did whenever we met, and talked about all kinds of things, elaborating with her hands. When she got excited, her voice got louder. I kind of liked it, but when she realized she was almost yelling, she got self-conscious and dropped into a whisper. Before long, she was yelling again, and when I saw her realize it, we both laughed. Hapamine. What's that mean? It's like dopamine that comes out when you're really happy.
Oh, yay?
And when you're really hurting, she explained, that's called hurtamine. What about when you're lonely? I asked. Lonelamine, she laughed. And there it is for me. New words. Suddenly, happy is no longer a vague emotion. It's something tangible, something inside of us that gets released. Hapamine feels like some kind of particle that exists in our body. Hurtamine, lonelamine, words that seem to give shape to things that are often hard to name. To me, the creation of new language is one of the functions or tasks of writers. I want to highlight this aspect of art, of stories, with the group. My third question finds its form. What do new creations like these give us as readers? What kind of world do they signify? Do they offer hope or despair? Do they lean towards peace or conflict, invention or destruction, uniqueness or repetition? What made me pause, though, in this story is the description of the character Nino Mia. He is the leader of the bullies. He is portrayed as the best athlete. He is incredibly smart and handsome. Whenever he tells a joke, everyone laughs. I says about him, none of us could keep up with him, not even the teachers. But later on in the story, when Nino Mia is about to assault Ice, he tells Ice he doesn't read novels. He says, I don't get novels. Reading about other people's lives or whatever, who cares? I mean, you have your own life, don't you? You'd see it if you ever put the book down. Why go out of the way to get caught up in someone else's made-up life? It's just like magic. Not real magic. Bogus magic. What's there to like? It's a gimmick. A trick. In reality, nothing's gonna change. No, maybe reading does change things. It makes them worse. Ruins your day. Anyway, it's just a load of bull. If it's not real magic, what's the point? It's just boring. This made me think. I am skeptical about this character description. Frankly, I wonder if a kid who's clever and sporty and handsome can be a bully. And on top of that, someone is a teacher's favorite but does not read novels at all. I'm not convinced by the portrayal of his character. Whether a character in a fictional story is credible is crucial to the impact of the story on the reader. I phrase question number 4. Do you think someone like Nino Mia really would be dismissive about reading? I'm on to my last question. At the end of the story, Kojima and Ice are both publicly shamed and pressured to undress. The bullies try to coerce them into having sex. It's a horrifying moment. Luckily, a middle-aged woman with an umbrella in the one hand and shopping bags in the other walks into the scene, and she chases the bullies away. We learn what happens to Ice afterwards, but we never hear from Kojima again. She simply vanishes from the story. Her disappearance troubles me, and so here's question 5. Why do we not hear about Kojima anymore after the public assault? What might her absence mean? I'm done preparing for the book club evening. I've got my questions ready, and I'm set to go. I arrive in the pouring rain, step out of my Uber, and walk through puddles to the bistro. It's buzzing, full of people. I panic a little. How am I going to hear my guests? And how can I even do my performance idea in a cafe this packed? But alongside the panic comes a thrill. I love this kind of cafe vibe. It takes me back to the ones I used to visit as a student in the Netherlands. I take a breath, let go of worry, and decide to just let it unfold. My usual book club attendees arrive, and some new faces too. The table fills up, even with 3 people absent. And for the first time since I started this club, The group is beautifully mixed in color, in age, and in gender. It is one of the goals I had for this public book club, and I feel grateful. Then comes another surprise. I ask my first question, and the answer mirrors my own thoughts exactly. I did not even need to show the video of Mel Robbins and Dr. Gabor Maté. The idea that it can be traumatic for children when parents are too absent was obvious to others as well. Two people willingly volunteer and perform a monologue. And even though the cafe is still buzzing, the effect of the monologues is powerful. The conversation that follows about the three different life strategies is lively and engaging. My third question, which explores the discovery and the creation of new words, finds resonance with everyone who read it. A comfort for me to notice, as I believe this aspect of this story should not be overlooked. But then, I pose my question about the likelihood of a bully being clever and handsome and at the same time a person who does not read at all. I am met with complete disagreement. Almost everyone in the group thinks that my view is too stereotypical. They believe such a character can absolutely exist. I am surprised, but I accept my bias. This is where I learn, and I don't mind. It's why we are here. I let go of my resistance and accept the character for who he is. And I learn more, as I really wondered why Kojima disappeared from the story. It's my final question, but my guests are very clear about this too. She had to leave. Her presence was blocking eyes from beginning his healing journey. Without her, he could finally step out of his role as victim. I realize the beauty of the story's ending lies in this shift, that the problem that contributed to the mental state of the main character, Eyes, is partly solved because the step-parent steps into his life. I see it as a reversal of roles. The former helper and friend, Kojima, turns out to be an obstacle and leaves the stage, while the former obstacle, the stepmom, enters the stage as a supporter of Eyes' mental health. This leaves us with a sense of relief, just a bit of much-needed hope. Another insight for me, another reason why conversations like these matter so much. Without this group discussion, I wouldn't have found this level of clarity about the story. In the meantime, the cafe got quiet, and I look at my watch. It is already after 8. We pack up, leaving behind a table scattered with empty wine glasses and plates with food leftovers. But we bring home with us memories, insights, and a deeper understanding of the story we discussed. I'd like to end this episode with a few more afterthoughts. The first is that this is a particular story, and what I discussed here shows aspects of this story and not about other stories. In our real world, there are many stories of parents who are absent or not as present as they ideally would like, and still things go right. The point of stories like these is to make us aware of the possible gaps we can all fall into, and to create new solutions to old problems. As bullying is an age-old problem, and we are still too often witnesses of the facts, and it often happens right before our eyes. Stories are always about something that happened. There is no story we tell without something we feel the need to share. And each story holds multiple possible endings. For Miko Kawakami to have come up with an ending like this, a reversal of roles, where the friend becomes an antagonist and an absent parent steps in as a source of support, shows the essential role of writers in our society. To create new solutions that point us in other directions. She created a story that not only lays bare what can go wrong, but she also reveals how it might go right. Like me, you might have watched the Netflix series Adolescence. It's very much talked about at the moment. It's where things totally go wrong. Absolutely horrifying to watch. A story where I think the parents were not absent at all, yet other happenings, events, made the bullying possible to the horrific point of no return. I'm relieved that with the book Heaven, we are left with a bit of hope and not that horrifying tight barbed wired knot in our chest like in adolescence. Because yes, we need to know what goes wrong in our world, but we also desperately need stories that point us in directions that can help us heal, or better even, directions that can prevent the bullying from happening. For me, Miko Kawakami wants us to reflect about when and why bullying happens. And more importantly, how healing becomes possible. Things go wrong all the time. But when we are surrounded by people who are willing to actively look at us and dare to care, the chances of a healing journey increase. I hope this account about my book club evening and thoughts about bullying will make you be aware of more. That is all. Hope you listen to the next one. Have a great day and try to find the time to read.